difficulty negotiating very difficult circumstances. And surely I think we'll be able to move and agree on general issues. Can I invite the chairperson of the commission, CR Commission, to make a presentation? And chairperson, you'll introduce also the team, just to ensure that today we know all of them who are here. And then we'll then open it for discussion. Like we requested yesterday, that in terms of discussion, always time is maximum 3 minutes, just to avoid that one person speaks for hours and others don't have space. We request also that we should respect that in order for us to allow everyone to speak in this to make a positive contribution. We have had the presentation since yesterday. The presentation was very encouraging, at least for us as members of parliament. Now we know some of the issues and challenges that we have raised. And surely we are going to engage and with the Sierra Right Commission and have our own discussion, because their structure that account to parliament but account to the committee broadly, and then we can to see what else we can do on the issues that we raise. We always prefer when colleagues raise issues, assist us with what should be the way forward. Always we should do that, because that will assist us a lot to address some of the challenges. We always understand that the CR was addressing the question of commercialization of religion and abuse of people's belief. That was a real question. And our understanding was that it was not an attempt by state to control anyone. The state would have no capacity to control religion anyway. We are a secular state and we can't be able to do all that. But how do you deal with the desperate situation of vulnerable in society is a question that all of us must try to address. And Professor Mkhize will say that even the learned also can be captured. Then it's a bigger issue and a bigger challenge that we are facing. We think the CR is here. They've been here since yesterday. They will then take some time, take us through some of the issues, critical point. And we'll open then the platform for all of us then to make general comment, proposals, and the way forward. And the committee then will meet with the CRR and have a real discussion, having been informed by this submission that has been presented to us. Let us, I request then the chairperson of the commission to introduce the team and also to take the platform.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and to the Honourable Members and our religious leaders in the room and academics in the room. My name is Thoko Mkhwana Sixaluva. I'm the chairperson of the Sierra Rights Commission. On my left is Professor Msoma, who is the deputy chair. I don't know if can you hear me? And we've got several commissioners. Commissioner Skuman over there, if you can wave his hand. Commissioner Khama, Commissioner Bota, somewhere. Commissioner Knutse, somewhere behind me. And our CEO, Mr. Mafatsa. Oh, where's Commissioner Mutsen?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Commissioner Mutsen there, far away. Yes, and as I said, our CEO, Mr. Mafatsa, our researcher, Brian Makegeta, here on the floor. It's a difficult one. There's also Mr. Mkolo over there, who's our communications person, and Valerie Naidu, who's in the chairperson's office. She has just gone out. Oh, where's she? Oh, she's on the floor. I couldn't see her. Well, that's basically our team. And we'll do a background statement, and then we'll go into the presentation. What we've done with the presentation is to say, I'm sure members received some submissions from many people who are in this room that came through FOSA's Facebook website, and we're addressing what we received point by point, because we feel basically what was covered yesterday and today is coming out of that submission, so that we can have a structured system to deal with it. But first and foremost, I'll hand over to the Deputy Chair, and then I'll read some statement, and then we'll go into the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the Religious Fraternity, members of the Commission, and the House at large. I want to commence by premising what I'm going to be saying by stating this, that if you do not understand the opposing views of your discussant, you are likely not able to understand your own. By that I mean that as a commission, we have been able to bring the issues to the national consciousness of South Africa. Hence, we are here today. And we're grateful for the insights, for the comments that have been learned through these 2 days together. As a commission, we have been guided in part by values that are more critical to our lives together, from the religious perspective, from the cultural perspective, and also from philosophical perspective. And I want to read now an extract from Pope Paul VI, where the emphasis is on what he called dignitatis humanae, the human dignity. And of course, from the Judeo-Christian heritage, we have what is called the vulnerability principle. And of course, in our own, we talk about Ubuntu. And these are the elements that have guided and shaped our thinking in response to the challenges we face. In 1965, during the Second Vatican Council, Pope Paul VI wrote the following. The right to religious freedom is exercised in human society. Hence, this exercise is subject to certain regulatory norms. In the use of all freedoms, the moral principle of personal social responsibility is to be observed. In the exercise in the exercise of their rights. In the exercise of their rights, individual men, social groups are bound by moral law to have respect for both the rights of others and for their own duties towards others and for their common welfare. Men are to deal with their fellow men in justice and civility. Furthermore, society has the right to defend itself against possible abuses committed on the pretext of freedom of religion. It is the special duty of the government to provide this protection. Its action is to be controlled by juridical norms which are in conformity with the objective moral order. These norms arise out of the need for effective safeguard of the rights of the citizens and of the peaceful settlement of conflict sites, also out of the need for adequate care and genuine public peace, and out of the need for proper guardianship and public order. If reading the report, you have not been able to glean these basic moral principles, then we will not be able to read from the same hymn sheet. Our concern and commitment is to ensure that South Africa, in its totality, under the guidance of God and the presence of those who lead the spiritual side of our people, are able to work together for the advancement of the development of our people. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Prof. I'll read a statement, as I said, and then I'll go to the presentation itself. As Chapter 9 institutions are founded on the principles of independence and on performing their functions without fear, favor, or prejudice, as outlined in the Constitution. It is the CRL Rights Commission's understanding that we need to treat every organization and every individual with respect that is inherent in their dignity as espoused in the Constitution. It is, however, not the responsibility and objective of the CRL Rights Commission to maintain the good name and reputation of any organization that decides to tarnish its reputation and good name through positions they take on certain matters or utterances they make in public. It is our belief that as a Chapter 9 institution, we come before any portfolio committee to tell the truth as we know it and as we can stand for it under oath. We also believe that it is also unconstitutional to threaten a Chapter 9 institution with fear of a lawsuit should it come to tell the truth as they know it. We have been advised by our legal counsel that we should officially inform this committee that we are being sued for defamation by FOSA on our response to what they have said about our report. This impacts directly on what we have been asked to do here today. The matter is currently before the Gauteng High Court and will be heard soon. The respondents are the CRL Rights Commission and myself specifically. I will now quote the part from FOSA's application insofar as it impacts on what we will be presenting today. It's number 70 in their court papers. I'll quote directly. It is vital, particularly with a view to the COCTA meetings that will take place in the fourth term of this year and at which FOSA will be representing its constituency before members of parliament, that FOSA's good name and reputation be maintained. We remain committed to ensuring that we defend and protect the rights of the poor and vulnerable communities out there when their cultural, religious, or linguistic rights are violated in spite of any intimidation and threats. We have every belief in the judiciary of this country that they will make the right decision when the time comes to decide on this application. They need to understand why it is important to consult with religious bodies in the recommendations we make as the CRL Rights Commission. It is important to note that these recommendations are not simply to regulate the religious leaders just for the sake of regulating them. The most fundamental principle is the protection and defense of poor and vulnerable people from some of the worst financial and human dignity abuses that are committed by some religious leaders in the name of religion. It is important also to note that religious organizations, by their very nature, represent religious leaders and not necessarily their congregants. This is the tightrope that the CRL Rights Commission practices may have had to work when consulting with religious leaders, when we know that some of them are commercializing the religion within their churches, and we have received complaints against their churches and have investigated them and concluded that the allegations are true. I should hasten to say that this includes both mainline and charismatic churches. We are mindful of the fact that the principle of player and referee is at the top of our minds as we go through these consultations with religious institutions. The balance that we have also been, we have also been consulting with traditional leaders, especially the monarchs, as we feel they are major stakeholders in this, since it is their people that are exploited, and they should have a say in how these issues are resolved to avoid religious organizations being players and referees in a situation where the playing fields are not level. I will be going through the presentation, as I said, that it is mainly based on what has been submitted to Parliament by people who have used the FOSA format. So we'll go through the basic principles, and then we'll go into the report as fast as we possibly can. We'll start with the Constitution itself. There has been utterances in terms of us being unconstitutional. The Commission has the power, as regulated by national legislation, necessary to achieve its primary objects, including the power to monitor, to investigate, to research, to educate, to lobby, advise, and most importantly, report on issues concerning the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. It's in the Constitution, and all that we've done was to report. We wrote a report, and we submitted it. So we are within the Constitution. And then the CRL Act, which was passed by Parliament, and specifically by this committee, of course, and the National Assembly. Section 5.1, it states, the Commission may do all that is necessary to achieve its objects referred to in Section 4 above, including two, we picked up the relevant ones. It would say monitor, investigate, and research any issue concerning the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. F would say educate, lobby, advise, and report on any issue concerning the rights of CRL communities. H, receive and deal with requests related to the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. I said make recommendations to the appropriate organ of state regarding legislation that impacts or may impact on the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. Some of the things that were said here was that we don't have a right to recommend any legislation. We are within the CRL Act, and it empowers us to do that. So we're not on a power-grabbing, whatever situation. We remain within the law. Then it says establish and maintain databases of CRL community organizations and institutions and experts in these communities. K says bring any relevant matter to the attention of the appropriate authority or organ of state, and where appropriate, make recommendations to such authority or organ of state in dealing with such a matter. There have been utterances here that we don't even have the power to make these recommendations, and that the whole thing should be chucked into a bin somewhere, whatever, whatever. We are within the law. We're not breaking any law. We're not doing anything other than what this Parliament asked us to do. There are questions raised which we have attended to one by one. Practices that are unusual but not harmful or unlawful. The Constitution says the Republic of South Africa is one sovereign democratic state founded on the values of human dignity, the achievement of equality, and the advancement of human rights and freedoms. You'll notice that throughout the presentation, we're sticking to human dignity because we feel this is a matter of human dignity. It's a constitutional imperative. Section 10 states that everyone has inherent dignity and the right to have their dignity respected and protected. The things we've seen are showing that there's a serious violation of human dignity. And that right is non-derogable. And you can't say we suspend the right to human dignity in order to protect freedom of religion. Section 39(1) states, when interpreting the Bill of Rights, a court, tribunal, or forum must promote the values that underlie an open and democratic society based on human dignity. We do agree that people must be free to believe. However, feeding people with snakes, grass, petrol, and other things, driving a car over them, pouring boiling water over them, kissing women in church, and all sorts of other things, degrades their value of human dignity. Our recommendations aim to have human beings' dignity respected and protected at all times. The submission says, practices that are potentially harmful or dangerous or unethical must be dealt with in terms of existing laws. We're saying if that's the case, someone, even Fosa, could have laid criminal charges against all these things that were happening. If people are saying there are enough laws, I think Professor explained it very well, Professor Mkize from the Africology Department, the psychologist in Africa, in terms of why is it difficult for people themselves to say, this is too bad for me. He calls it mind capture. And when you deal with people whose minds have been captured, you need to protect them in spite of the fact that they are fine with it. Because the laws would not allow you to lay charges against people who will then be the witnesses of the pastor who's been abusing them. Because there's a mind capture, as the professor calls it, who's a psychology professor. The Civil Rights Commission remains convinced that interdicting every incident of commercialization of religion and harmful tradition, religious and traditional practices will not be financially prudent as per austerity measures. One interdict will cost you up to 500,000. And if you're going to be interdicting every pastor, we know per month how many, because they tend to protect themselves. They have a right to defend themselves if you take them to court. Even if it's 300,000, 200,000, I'm sure the committee knows that's the money we don't have. And if we'll interdict every pastor in this country that we know at this point are doing something, we will be in a situation where those of us who monitor what's happening on the ground, at any given stage, you would have 10 different pastors to interdict. And one thing we've done and be consistent with, we've said matters of the doctrine do not belong in courts, and we have been consistently saying so and doing so. If we take them to court and they are quoting St. Paul and St. Peter, then the judge must then rule on whether this St. Peter story is valid or not. And we're saying that's not where it should be. It should be within the religious sector itself, where issues of doctrine are discussed and debated and not in court. As he says, it is submitted that while one may justifiably feel a sense of moral outrage at charlatans and con artists who exploit the poor and vulnerable in society, unless such commercialization also amounts to harmful or unlawful activity, there is no legal justification for intervention. We found this very strange. It's in those documents that members received. If you go to those things that you received, this is clearly in those, whatever number you got of the submissions. It's number C6 there. And we do not understand why are some of these pastors referred to as charlatans and con artists, and yet they must be left to continue exploiting people who are poor and vulnerable. It's not us who call them that. Forza is calling them charlatans and con artists. How can a con artist, you submit this document to Parliament and you're saying to the portfolio committee members, leave them, let them be, but they are con artists. We believe the fundamental role and obligation of the state is to protect the poor and vulnerable from con artists and charlatans. This includes ensuring that there is a tight legal framework that protects them. You can't say to us there are charlatans and con artists out there, but let them be. There's no legal justification to deal with con artists. For me, a con artist should be dealt with fast and furious, and if there's no legal framework, create one to deal with the con artists. The Sarah Rice Commission is well within its mandate when it recommends that there should be legislation that protects and promotes the rights of people in the religious sector. Freedom of religion was never meant to protect charlatans and con artists. Any lobby group protecting these types does not have the interests of the poor and vulnerable who are being exploited. The con artists are preying on poor people. The con artists and those charlatans target people. We've heard over and over that everyone agrees with us that there's a problem out there. We are saying the problem needs to be addressed aggressively, not in any wishy-washy method. This is non-compliance or non-enforcement of existing laws. We have noted the gaps in the system and the recommendations to SAPS and others cover that. We've made recommendations to Home Affairs, where a lot of South African pastors have complained to us about the issue. I think even here, we've said to SAPS, they must do what they need to do and use the laws, so that if I go lay a charge against a pastor who has done something, they should be able to arrest those pastors. We have raised this issue with the police that, you know, religious leaders come with something. Even when you are a police person, dealing with a religious leader is usually very difficult. If you are, I'm sure there are bishops here, if you have to arrest a bishop, Bishop Matkebes is wearing cassock. It's very difficult because we come from a particular perspective and there's a way we do these things. And we've said to them, use what is there. And they've said to us, we cannot use the normal criminal justice framework if the complainant is somebody who says, I saw something on TV, and the actual victim is saying, I am fine with it. The issue of protecting people should go beyond. They are adults. They should know better. They should go lay charges. If they won't lay charges, then it's their problem. There's no law that allows for the registration of religious practitioners, for their monitoring, and for their, most importantly, accountability. People must be held accountable. And there's no law that allows for that. What they do within their church is what they do. And the poor people are buying into this thing. The poor people have nowhere. If you're poor, you're unemployed. And we are in a state of a huge divide between you and the others, you become extremely vulnerable. You're not talking about me here. You're talking about poor people who are in townships, in shacks, in villages, and in the inner city. They are the most vulnerable. And what we're saying is that we are saying the church in this case, because we're talking to Christians today, must take responsibility. The church must be able to say, we don't want to hear anymore. The peers must say, the legal peers would say to a lawyer, you are misbehaving, you know, we don't want you to be one of us. We are saying as the church, take that responsibility, but you need a legal framework that will help you to do that. And we're not talking about doctrine. We all know what we're talking about. We're talking about people who are abusing other people. We're not talking about how you're going to preach, whom you're going to pray to, how many times are you going to pray, what is in the Bible. The Bible is closed. We've always said this has nothing to do with the doctrine. There's no law that allows for the registration of places of worship. If you register as an NPO, you register as towards churches in Christ. I've got 500 churches. You only need 6 people who are on the board of the NPO. That's all that you need. But I've got this other 500 people who are listed nowhere except by me in this NGO. I only know that when I'm in the office or at home. But social development won't tell you who are the people in this church. So there's a huge gap there. If you say to social development, how many churches are under this umbrella that Togo Taluva established there, they are legally registered. I am legally registered, but only with 6 board members. And not the other 500 people that nobody knows. So we're saying there must be a law that will say, I'm Pastor so-and-so. I'm operating from Zone 3 in Gwalanga. And this is my name and ID, etc. No one has that. You find that with mainline churches. They have that. And they've given that to us. I remember the Methodist Church gave us every detail of every reverend anywhere in the country. They're already licensing them. We'll get to that later on. It's already happening. We're not asking them to do something that they've never done before. It's there. And all we're saying is, then use it effectively and efficiently. The laws that exist were not designed for the current challenges, especially around willing participants. I've touched on that. The issues of doctrine can only be dealt with by seniors in that particular doctrine and not by the court as proposed by Forza. It says lack of good governance. The Sarah Rice Commission could function as a one-stop shop for religious institutions and practitioners on issues affecting them. That's a recommendation from Forza. Our recommendations say each umbrella organization should educate its members in the era of good governance. It's already happening. SOSIC is telling us they're educating their people. CLEVER is doing the same thing. A lot of umbrella organizations are already doing that. So if we become a one-stop shop, then it means we must then take over the role that already exists. That umbrella organizations are already involved in. So if we're going to be a one-stop shop for religious institutions and practitioners on issues affecting them, it's their umbrella organizations that must deal with that. And at the most, it's the peer review committee. We're saying it would affect your freedom of religion when the CRL Commission becomes a one-stop shop. If we become a one-stop shop, then we rule over everybody. And actually, this we worried that this would even complicate issues more if you're trying to protect freedom of religion and want us to be a one-stop shop. When we say the umbrella must be a one-stop shop, and you're handing that power over to us, we feel we're not there for that. How many religions are in this country? That the CRL Commission would be a one-stop shop for Rastafaris, for African religion, for Baha'is, for everyone. It would not work. Let them find the one-stop shop in their umbrella organization and not with us. The CRL Rights Commission remains committed to its primary objects, to monitor, investigate, research, educate, lobby, advise, and report on issues concerning CRL Rights communities as outlined in Section 185(2) of the Constitution. There's no one-stop shop in the Constitution or in the Act. The CRL Rights Commission solution to all the above problems is the broad-based regulation of religion in South Africa. We'd like to state members categorically, we have never said nor implied that religion should be regulated. We have said religious practitioners should be regulated. Religion is the doctrine. If you start regulating religion, it means here in Parliament you then have to say how many times must they pray, who must do what. We're saying there's a huge difference between a practitioner and the religion itself. A practitioner is someone who chooses a particular career path and says, I want to be a religious leader. And the Constitution covers that part. Why within the Constitution? It's the human being, not the Bible. The Bible has nothing to do with anything. When you say to a human being, you must be regulated as a human being, why within the Constitution then? We have never said religion must be regulated. We want to state categorically. The regulation we're talking about is of the practitioners, the professionals only. The Constitution says, Section 22, every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely. Choose to be a pastor, choose to be a reverend, choose to be a bishop. The practice of a trade, occupation, or profession may be regulated by law. Not the religion, but the human being who has made a choice about a particular career. The Constitution says you may be regulated by law. So all we're saying to the Portfolio Committee is that regulate the profession as per the Constitution. The acceptance that there are problems is noted. Our solution is not to regulate religion, but to ensure that religious practitioners are held accountable by their own peers, whom they've elected themselves, not us. We still insist that accountability should not be based on the freedom to choose to be held accountable or not to be forced to be held accountable. It has to be compulsory that you must be held accountable. It's not a choice. As the CRL Rights Commission is still the same, surely all the religious leaders who have received a calling, every time they fill an official document at the bank or wherever, and they're asked what their profession is, they write something down. They don't say, I don't have a profession. When the form says profession, probably pastor, bishop. So it's a profession. We cannot run away from that. And the Constitution knows what to do with the profession. There is a huge difference between regulating religion and regulating practitioners, as I've repeatedly said, and every commissioner and every employee of the CRL Rights Commission has been consistent on this one. This is happening in many mainline churches, as I said. They're already registering their people, they're already monitoring them, they're already holding them accountable. We're not starting a revolution. We're saying what is working there, let's spread it to include the other people who are out there in the wilderness, because it's working very well in other places. The report proposes that the CRL Act be amended so as to establish an elaborate structure of committees, all whom will be subject to the CRL Rights Commission, and the Commission will be the final arbiter. We say this issue of final arbiters has been exhaustively explained to FOSA. This means there are other laws that govern the rights of people, e.g. labor laws. If the peer review committee comes to the CRL Commission and says remove this pastor from the register, we need to know if everything has been followed. There are laws in this country. Issue of labor laws are a right of people. So if you just sit and say we don't like this pastor, remove this pastor, it won't work. The CRL Rights Commission will be the final arbiter in whether these laws have been followed during any hearings. The CRL Rights Commission needs to minimize legal challenges that are unnecessary because we didn't follow procedure. The CRL Rights Commission would not be the final arbiter in any matter. And I think misleading people about extracting words and phrases to mislead others is unpardonable. The paragraph immediately below that final arbiter states whatever decisions taken by the CRL Rights Commission can be challenged through a High Court review, like other decisions of other Chapter 9 institutions. This, the issue of the final arbiter in South Africa, we all know it's the Constitutional Court and nobody else. And this has been deliberately ignored. And people have been misled into saying these people want to control religion. They are proposing all these things in order to get into your business. And it's not true. That this amounts to state capture of religion. You know, this is so unfortunate, really. The issue of state capture is a very serious matter. That the whole nation is seized with. And you cannot throw around the term because you want to create a media hype or whatever you want to create. State capture is a very serious matter. And we feel it is an absolute misrepresentation of facts that when a Chapter 9 institution make recommendations as per their mandate, they are called gunning for a state capture. Some of the issues that have been raised by FOSA is we want to siphon billions from the religious sector to give to the state. And that, of course, was appointed by President Zuma. You can make your own conclusions in that what they've uttered against the CRL Commission. Of course, were appointed by the president. However, I don't know how we'll ever, as the CRL Commission, siphon billions from the religious sector to give to the state. When you're trying to scare off people, you can say a whole range of things, but I think the truth and facts should be fundamental and shouldn't mislead people in the hope that they are not going to really interrogate what you say. The recommendations clearly state that there should be a peer review committee, and the state, let alone government, has nothing to do with any of the recommendations. Nothing. So it's a fallacy to say there's a state capture. There's no state capture.
Yes, sir. I'm actually worried about, it looks like we are attending an engagement between CRL and FOSA. And I think that is unfair to us because we exist, we are here. And I think the whole presentation refers to FOSA, FOSA, FOSA. I think that is very unfair, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, we explained that what we've done is to deal with the submissions that members received. And when we met with the members, they told us that these submissions have been coming to their inboxes. But secondly, the vast of the stuff that FOSA has raised has also been raised here yesterday and today. So we're covering everything else that other people have raised here. And the issue of, for instance, dumping the thing into File 13 was never raised by FOSA. It was raised here in this room. So we're not covering anything, and I think, Chair, you'll give guidance.
I just think that the real reason why we wanted to allow you to make some comments is not really to engage on some of the issues. You have already submitted your report to us. You are the one that have to take a final decision on it after we have listened to everyone here. But we allow you to take some of the issues general, not for foresight, general comment that have been made by people. And then, of course, foresight because they wrote and then we received many input from them. But general is really comment general because members also comment on some of the issues there. We are not trying to convince each other. Only the committee that will be convinced. We are just raising issues as they are. We have listened to you as individual. We know exactly what you have said. The committee is going to see what we can do on that. Let us leave the chair to proceed. We'll come to you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. The Sarah Rights Commission proposals are a clear overreach of their legislative powers and prerogatives, as a Chapter 9 institution. That was raised even today. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa states, the Commission has the additional powers and functions prescribed by national legislation. The power to amend any piece of legislation, including the Sarah Rights Act, is the competence of Parliament, not of the Sarah Commission. The Sarah Commission has delivered on its object in advising Parliament on the protection of poor and vulnerable people. The proposals we have put forward are within the powers of the Sarah Rights Commission to protect Sarah Commission communities. The peer review committee will be dependent on and under the control of the Sarah Rights Commission. Our report states that each peer review committee will refer matters and advise the Sarah Rights Commission on the resolutions taken by the peer review committee. The peer review, yes, the financial and administrative arrangements of any peer review committee will be determined by the portfolio committee when the relevant legal framework is designed. We make recommendations, and of course people who have the final say in this matter is the portfolio committee. If the portfolio committee wants an independent practice registry for religious practitioners and places of worship, the Sarah Rights Commission will fully support this. However, this will mean fully funding this registry and giving it powers to monitor, research, investigate, and educate in order for them to be able to have a whole disciplinary code. You need to give them power to subpoena, you need to give them all the other powers. These powers have already been given to the Sarah Rights Commission by Section 1852 of the Constitution. So there will be a dual citizenship. This, however, will not change the proposed structure except to remove the Sarah Rights Commission as the registry holder. The Sarah Rights Commission remains conscious of avoiding duplication of functions in order to save costs with all competing needs of the state. Ultimate control of all religion will therefore vest in the Sarah Rights Commission. We have said on numerous occasions that the Sarah Rights Commission does not intend to control any religion and its dogma or doctrine. Hence, our recommendations give power to the umbrella organizations and in appeal matters to the peer review committee. Umbrella organizations will be evaluated on whether their doctrine and practices are acceptable, which is a violation of freedom of religion. The issue of doctrine shall solely be the prerogative of umbrella organizations and not the Sarah Rights Commission. The umbrella organizations will be responsible for determining what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in their doctrine. This is the cornerstone of freedom of religion. The Sarah Commission will take decisions regarding the acceptability of doctrinal belief and expression. This is simply not true by a mere skeptic. We have said on numerous occasions that matters of dogma and doctrine are a no-go area for us. And there's the very simple matter of the Methodist Church. and the Constitutional Court. There's already a decision by the Constitutional Court on this matter of doctrine and dogma. Even the Constitutional Court itself refused to deal with the issue of dogma and doctrine. We leave the matters of dogma and doctrine to each umbrella organization and the peer review committee in our recommendations. The Sarah Rice Commission proposal insists that all religious practitioners and associated places of worship must belong to an umbrella organization. This association is compulsory and without exception. It is therefore a violation of the right of freedom of association, as it does not include the right to choose not to associate. Freedom of association deals with an individual choosing his or her own umbrella organization. People will be free to choose whatever umbrella organization they want to belong to. Freedom of association applies the same to all other professions. For instance, a lawyer cannot choose not to belong to the law society. But you see, what then, there are consequences to that. Yes, they can. But you see, what then happens is that you lose certain rights. But you see, if you choose to be a pastor, and you come back and you say, I want to be a standalone, not to be held accountable by anybody, and you leave it to say, those that want to be governed by a particular law will be governed by it. And those that choose not to can continue doing whatever it is they are doing. And the most likely scenario is that those that you want to pin down will choose not to be part of it. And then you're back to square one. And it's all about poor, vulnerable people that need to be protected. Many mainline churches, does the national fiscus have the budget and capacity to set up and maintain such an elaborate regulatory structure as proposed by the Sarah Rice Commission? We base it on the fact that many mainline churches have umbrella organizations which are already in existence and are self-funded. A lot of existing umbrella organizations like the SACC, whatever else, they are self-funded. They are not funded by the state. We are saying that the peer review committee will be funded by the Sarah Rice Commission for all their meetings. The rest in terms of to monitor, investigate, research, educate, advise and lobby are already funded through the Sarah Rice Commission.
Yes,
Chairperson. Yes.
There's a member who is...
Oh, sorry.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, my question emanates from the gentleman's concern there. That, you know, I think most reference is put on FOSA. And I'm beginning to wonder if in this house there are members of this, or all these members are members of that FOSA who has put, the commission to court. Because much reference is drawn from. I just have that question, Chair.
No, surely they represented themselves when they were making their submission. I always understood FOSA as a lobby group, nothing more than that. Advocacy group, lobby group, NGO, trying to win the hearts and minds of the people that they lobby on their behalf. It's really not a bigger issue in my view. Of course, Chairperson would, until... It, 20 minutes should conclude and we engage. Yes, sir.
But I also feel, Chair, that let's not limit the Chairperson in answering any other question that has been raised and other issues. I think it's fair, Chair. Yesterday, everybody was given a platform to raise whatever, and we have been taking note for those things. So I think it would be fair as well. Let's leave her deal with any issues and any matters that has been raised, either now or yesterday, so that we understand the background. It's for us to decide after we have heard almost both sides. Whether, even if it is FOSTA, let her go through those issues, because some of these matters are being already are in the public domain. If it's not been answered in this room, where else would we get the answer? I felt, Chair, that let's allow the Chair to take us through whatever that she has presented in the Commission so that we know for sure what is going on there. That is our instance. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, I think we are doing that exactly. We'll allow her, but of course, time limitation. And then it can be 17 hours, time limitation, to ensure that, anyway, we are still going to be engaging with the CR Right Commission ourselves. Out of this meeting, General, we are still going to be engaging with them on many issues. Let us allow you, Chair, to raise. Of course, really, just is written somewhere, but I think we are talking about broader questions.
Yes.
That they've been raised. Otherwise, it would be so unfair for them to be them, when I see many people are representing themselves here, raising issues. Some of the issues are the same. Everyone was worried about the state taking charge of religion. There were a lot of issues that were raised here. And then I think then just deal with the bigger issues that we have already covered on some of the issues. Force awareness, force will be understood that we are talking about many other issues that have been raised by religious leaders and presenters since yesterday.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The issue of ignoring submissions and alternative solutions proposed by the majority of the faith communities in South Africa, that has been raised generally even yesterday and in other forums. The report that we've tabled from page 27 to about 29, it lists 15 issues that were raised by the religious sector, and it addresses this. The issue of a peer review council as a standalone committee, as Clefa said, was a recommendation from the religious sector to be delinked from the main structure and to make it a standalone. So we did listen thoroughly to what people were saying. And some of the advice they gave us was excellent advice, and we followed it religiously. And we were saying we took time to listen to people generally. That we interviewed a few people, I think even yesterday that was raised, that we interviewed only 85 religious practitioners before coming to the conclusion. If you look at the report at the end, the majority of people who were invited are leaders of religious institutions. For instance, the president of the South African Catholic Bishops' Conference is not there as an individual. The head of the Methodist Church in Southern Africa, Bishop Iwa, was not representing himself. The chief rabbi was not representing himself. So there were the majority that was there were people who are leading bigger institutions, bigger organizations, etc. The CRR Rights Commission should refer complaints of abuses to the relevant authorities. That has been raised even today, that there are enough laws to discipline people who have referred to that. We have stayed away from interdicting individuals, as we said, because it's not financially prudent. When you interdict them on one issue, then they go to another. If they're doing snakes today, the next day they're doing cars, driving them over people, for instance. We can be suggested that we can play a leading role in ensuring that religious leaders and their organizations understand their legal obligations. We say that responsibility should be the umbrella organizations of peers who will then, you know, be capacitated if the umbrella organization wants the CRL to capacitate them to understand legislation, policies. They are free to approach us for that kind of thing, but not individuals, but umbrella organizations. Issue of setting minimum standards of good governance, ethics, and acceptable religious practices as their religious doctrine is the role of umbrella organizations. The issue of the code of ethics, I think it was raised yesterday and even today by several speakers. The code of ethics is already being worked on by the CRR Rights Commission, and we have assigned a commissioner who is also looking at international models. Commissioner Knutse, that I introduced earlier, is looking at a code of ethics. And if people want to, at this point, while we're still thinking, we haven't produced anything, once it's ready, we'll share it with the people. He was in the U.S. just a few weeks ago. He's traveling to look at international practices in terms of the code of ethics. However, we agree that the code of ethics is at the core of everything. If you don't have it, then there'll be a problem. However, enforcement of the code of ethics is critical, because then if you don't enforce it, then it's just a nice little thing that won't help. We'll also be holding a conference on this once we've reached a particular stage. We have discussed it as the commission, that once we reach a particular stage, we'll then invite others, and others are already participating in it. We're almost at the end now. South African religious community is well able to self-regulate and to make the necessary adjustment. We fully agree with this statement. That even several religious leaders today, they refer to issue of self-regulation, and we agree with that totally. We're not fighting with that. With the right legislation giving powers to the religious community, this will make it happen. The majority in the religious community, especially Christians, are good practitioners, but the charlatans and con artists need to be dealt with. We appeal to the, you know, there's been a few appeals to the portfolio committee to have a broad consultation on this. It was raised by several religious leaders yesterday, but also today. We're saying, as the CRL Rights Commission, we've consulted and we continue educating and informing the religious sector about the report. We've done everything that we are empowered to do by the legislation, and we continue talking to people about it. Our public education is always out there talking. To conclude, Honorable Chair, we want to restate that doing nothing at this stage is not possible. It's too dangerous to do that. The protection of poor, vulnerable, and sometimes gullible people is the basic responsibility of the state. The right to freedom of religion should not be exploited to protect people that are out to abuse vulnerable people. It was not the spirit of the drafters of the Constitution. The urgency of solving the problem out there should be understood based on what is already happening out there. The Constitution itself has a limitation clause in Section 36, and it is our well-considered view that the recommendations made are within the provision, in that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. The recommendations have taken into account all relevant factors, including the five listed in this section of the Constitution. The CRL Rights Commission wants to state that in our consultation with the umbrella organizations, they stated non-negotiables, a few non-negotiables which we feel we should share with Parliament: the independence of the local church, the protection of doctrine, the principle of freedom of religion as enshrined in the Constitution. However, that should exclude people who are out to exploit the poor. The acceptance that some churches want to retain the right to license their practitioners. We are saying whatever structure Parliament decides on to hold the practice registry is, however, fine with the CRL Rights Commission. It's not our competence. Others have told us that self-representation and self-articulation by religious formations is non-negotiable. The issue of agency is non-negotiable. We've acknowledged that. keeping the religious community informed on the way forward in order to ensure that the principles they've raised are protected as the legislative framework unfolds. We've committed to that, to those that we've spoken to. And Honorable Chair, we did say we'll finish even before 1 hour.
At least there's time. But I know that we are exhausted already since yesterday. I think my spirit is captured already. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it's very helpful. Just again to repeat what I thought yesterday we say. First, there was a general view that self-regulation is a preferred way of doing things. And also they raised the issue of code of conduct or ethics, whatever code. I think there will be general issues where there's an agreement amongst all of us. There will be other specific issues then that need more detailed discussion and engagement. That is the beginning of a long process, and it's not the end of that process. Melham, you want to make a point? Sorry.
Chair, a couple of points. First of all, let me... Is the chairperson okay? Chair, let me repeat my concern that I raised yesterday. I'm very, very worried that we have heard one side of the religious community here. We've heard effectively the Christian faith and to a very limited extent the traditional religions over the past 2 days. We have heard nothing from the Muslim community. We've heard nothing from the Jewish community. We've heard nothing from the Hindu community or the Buddhist community or any of the other religions that may or may not be affected by this. And I think that's something that we really, really need to take into account, that we might need to have another day where we exclude the Christian community and we say this is going to be focused on all the other religions. And I'm not trying to be exclusionary, but I'm trying to actually bring a diversity to what we do. Chair, then just a couple of points. The deputy chairperson of the CRL spoke about Vatican II, the Dignitatis Humanae, and he quoted a portion of it, and I'd like to read a different portion of it, if I may. In fact, it's the conclusion of it. And it says, "The fact is that forms of government still exist under which, even though freedom of religious worship receives constitutional recognition, and this is the important part, the powers of government are engaged in the effort to deter citizens from the profession of religion and to make life very difficult and dangerous for religious communities." Now that's the second last paragraph of the Dignitatis Humanae. I also want to highlight the point that the chairperson said. She said it's unpardonable to come before this committee and mislead them with statements. Chairperson, you did that last week. You did that. This is the slide that you presented to us on the 5th of October, where you said you had the support of the South African Council of Churches, TISA, CLIFA, South African Union Council of Independent Churches, the IFCC, the ZCC, and the Great Commission. We have since heard evidence over the past 2 days that some of these organizations, and I'm not saying all, but some of these organizations do not support your presentation. So it's equally unpardonable on you to mislead us. Lastly, on that point, it is also an offense in terms of the Powers and Privileges of Parliament Act, Section 17(1) C and D, to mislead a committee of Parliament. So to come here and say this and then discover that it's actually not the case, that's misleading Parliament. Let me put that to one side. And let's talk about the substance of freedom of religion for a moment. Let me talk about the substance of freedom of religion for a moment. So I have a couple of concerns, and I think that the various people in this room including the CRL, need to respond to it. I think it was the SARF who said religious leaders are silent about these abuses. And I have to question why they are silent. Why have you, sir, not stood up and said something? Why have you, sir, or you, not stood up and said, this is unacceptable behavior? Why are you silent? What is the issue that is preventing you from raising this as a concern? But as a follow-on to that, the chairperson said that it's costly to interdict. Well, first of all, you don't have that authority to interdict. In terms of the Constitution, you can't go and interdict someone. However, you do have the power to refer a matter to the relevant authority. And what I would ask is, what have you done to implement a complaints procedure and set up processes for different types of complaint to different authorities, whether it's the Human Rights Commission or the SAPS or the Public Protector or the like? What have you done as a CRL to facilitate that complaints procedure? You also spoke about the fact that this proposal of yours is about regulation of religious practitioners. It's not about regulation of religion. Well, I would argue that as soon as you start asking them to register their place of worship, or as soon as you start asking them to submit financials, or as soon as you start asking them how they operate, you are regulating the practice of religion. And that's far broader than the regulation of religious practitioners. And I would ask how this reconciles with the two constitutional court cases that specifically address this. And here I'm talking about State versus Lawrence and Prince versus the Law Society of South Africa. Now, in State versus Lawrence, Judge Chaskelson wrote the following. He said, "The essence of the concept of freedom of religion is the right to entertain such religious belief as a person chooses, as the individual chooses. The right to declare religious beliefs openly and without fear of hindrance or reprisal, and the right to manifest religious belief by worship, and this is very important, and practice, or by teaching and dissemination." So, if I choose to kiss a snake or eat grass, if I choose to do that, what Judge Chaskelson was saying, if that's my religious belief, I have the right to make that belief. Yes. And further, this was upheld in Prince versus the Law Society of South Africa when they said that people are free to believe even if that belief is bizarre, illogical, or irrational. Now, how do you reconcile what you are proposing here with that constitutional court decision, those two constitutional court decisions, which are very, very clear, and they interpret what the Constitution says? I'm not asking to change the Constitution. I'm asking, this is what the constitutional court has found. So what you're proposing, how do you reconcile it with that? Just one last thing, and that is, if I choose to eat grass because that's my religious belief, and please, members of the Christian faith, please understand I'm using this as an example. How is that any different from me choosing to eat the communion wafer as the body of Christ? How is that any different? It's my belief. Belief is a personal thing. It's not a state thing. It's not a societal thing. It's a personal thing. So how is that any different?
He's wrong. Very wrong.
I'm wrong.
Mr. Order. Order, Chair.
I'm sorry. What am I being called to order on? He can't call me to order.
Yeah, but it's out of order, Chair. This member is out of order.
I know that, Chair. I'm well aware of that, but I'm very interested as to how a member of the public can call me to order.
No. Other types of reaction, Chair.
Chair, so essentially I have a number of questions here, and they apply to both the CRL and the religious practitioners in the house. That last one, and it's not meant facetiously, it's meant as, how do you justify what one person believes versus what another person believes? And how can you say that your belief is right and their belief is wrong? Whether I believe in flying pumpkins or, I don't know what, eating grass, or drinking petrol. If that's my belief, who are you, who are you, who are all of you, to say that that's not my belief? And the last thing about this is, as soon as you create these umbrella bodies, I'm very worried, because you said the umbrella bodies will have the authority over doctrine and dogma. But what happens when, let's say, in the Jewish faith, there is a splinter group? What happens when that splinter group isn't in line with the majority of doctrine and dogma? How do you then say, you say that, well, they've got to join another umbrella group, but the other umbrella groups are Christian or Buddhist or whatever. And how do you reconcile a Catholic with a Pentecostal, with a charismatic, with a evangelical? The differences are vast. So how do you start finding a common dogma? And the answer is you can't. And that's why churches splinter. It's why political parties splinter. Because people believe different things. Let me leave it there, Chair, because there's a lot of stuff for people to answer to.
That is a beginning. I've noted. I don't think we want to exhaust everything now. Otherwise, we have to be here until tomorrow morning. Let us give the gentleman, he has been raising his hand so early on. But, Mloi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Before I get to my point, I want to submit that I'm not doing a hit and run, Chair. I'm going to have to leave at 15:30. Yes. To respond to the Honourable Member, why are we silent? I can categorically say that me sitting here, I was never silent. We went and confronted Lesego Daniels and stuff like that with the South African Council of Churches. We were collected as leaders of the Christian faith, and we made a statement to say we are condemning such acts, and it was recorded in the Sowetan. Right. Number two, I would want to indicate as well that, Honourable Member, there's also a complaints procedure that is, and I'm not responding on behalf of the CRL, but I'm aware of that. They have a complaints manual, of which in handling this engagement with the public, they completely threw it out, and they just went straight to summoning. But when you look at their complaints handling procedures manual, it speaks about invitation. It actually starts at the advent of complaint. There must first be a complaint. Then when that complaint has been received, then they must invite. When the person refuses the invitation based on the complaint, then later on at the very last stage can they summon. I've read it. I know it. Right. Coming to the point of the presentation by CRL, we really appreciate it. However, I would think, Chair, that it is very, very discouraging and almost, I'm lacking a better Christian word to use, because all the words that are coming are bad ones, but it's fine. I would think that it is... That's why I'm refraining from mentioning it. It is very unfortunate, Chair, that we first... for the first time have to sit in this kind of a setting to be able to engage with the commission. That is a very unfortunate thing. And the religious sector has been calling over and over and over for this kind of a neutral setup, so that the CRL Commission, like they've done now, to clarify certain issues of concern that we've had and to also allow us to engage. It's very unfortunate that we had to come to this kind of a setup and almost hijack your meetings to be able to raise our concerns. It's very unfortunate. The last part, I think, is that it is very unfortunate, Chair, that we are sitting here and discussing people or the action of the commission, which is based on people who have done certain things and they are not here. It is quite very, very unfortunate. And it is very also unfortunate that an organ of state like the CRL Commission, even though they want to deny their state identity, but they are an organ of state because they are legislated, can sit here and promote a very blanket approach to acts of individuals. That is very unfortunate. The last one, Chair, is that the presentation of the Commission, Chair, is that the peers, they're saying they are promoting a place where the peers themselves, or the peer review committee, the peers themselves should hold the member or the member accountable. Yet the very same commission itself, which according to the CRL Act 19 of 2002, says that for them to be commissioners, they should be a nominated from our own constituencies. Yet we can't even hold them accountable. So how do they expect us to go and hold other people while they themselves make documents, produce them, rush them to Parliament without even wanting to consult with us or talk to us on any way? How many times should we be calling for a proper consultation process? They will always feed this House and say, we have consulted extensively. But can they quantify and bring quality to that supposed consultation process? Because I've never been to any of their consultation processes because we've never been invited. So, and I would think, I would agree with the member when he says that because there is lack of representation by certain sectors of the, or certain members of the religious sector, is it then a fair conclusion which was drawn by the CRL Commission, even if they argue that there were the 85 people that they spoke to were heads of religious bodies. But 85 organizations, is it a real proper quality to draw all their conclusions on which they base their recommendations, Chair? Thank you so much.
May I assist my leader? You remember you noted me while she was presenting and said you'll come to. Unfortunately, I have to leave, Chair. My flight is now closing. I'm coming to that. No, I'm not. Thanks for the citizenship. Yeah. Quickly, Chair. I won't take long. Yes. Quickly. Chair, I think it's not all lost. I think I want to, with the privilege of what I had yesterday throughout the day, it's not all lost. I want to take from what my colleague Mloi said. I think we need to even take it further and apologize maybe that within our practices and all these things that we do in the name of religion, we could not come together to clean our slates and bring something that can be digestible en route to policy making. I think that is the state. So what we want to say as point number one, Chair, is that the issue of meeting again with other people who are not represented here, I want to request that when you do your final analysis, maybe don't consider that as yet. Allow all of us in South Africa who are under the category of the matter being considered now to converge elsewhere, perhaps under the facilitatorship of CRL and the portfolio committee, so that whatever we come up with there is something that all of us as practitioners in our diverse nature can be saying we understand and we're supporting one another. And when it comes here, it comes as a matter that then gets en route into a policy process. That is the point I wanted to make. Thanks.
I'm Michael Swain, Executive Director of Freedom of Religion South Africa, 4SA. So I believe that it's important that we have the right to respond to some of the remarks made by the Chair Lady of the Civil Rights Commission. Given, sir, if I could...
The committee.
But sir, it's a matter of public record.
It's a meeting of the committee. I'm saying, I was trying to avoid these others, but back your point, 2 minutes. Take other issue that will take us more, because you want to deal with this issue ourselves.
We will make a brief statement, sir.
Okay.
Very brief.
Take the point.
2 minutes.
Okay, take the time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, for us, I specifically elected not to burden this Honourable Committee with a defamation matter between us and the Commission. The application is sub judice, the court will deal with it in due course, and it's not necessary or indeed appropriate to traverse it in this forum, and I will therefore not elaborate on it any further. As was raised also by one of the other representatives in Parliament today, it is evident that the CRL submissions were almost entirely based on and directed at their interpretation of 4SA's written submissions to the CRL, and failed specifically also to deal with the proactive recommendations presented by us in full hearing yesterday, which the Chair Lady, who was not present yesterday, and of course did not hear, but which statement we are very happy with the Chair's permission to repeat in this House again for benefit. It is unfortunate that the CRL chose to take this approach, as this Chair, with respect, was their opportunity to respond to the almost 40 organizations representing millions of people from across denominations, churches, and faith groupings who have taken great time and expense over the past 2 days, and indeed to all the religious people in South Africa, to address the CRL on their concerns in relation to what is being proposed. Surely, the CRL does not suggest that major groupings such as the SACRRF, TISA, the Catholic Church, the Dutch Reformed, and many others, all the many other national and international organizations and respected legal experts who've appeared before you and who happen to share 4SA's concerns, have such little understanding, insight, independence, and authority as to simply parrot what they supposedly heard 4SA say somewhere or read on our Facebook page. I cannot, of course, speak for those organizations and experts, Mr. Chair, but with the greatest of respect, I would think they may well perceive such insinuation as borderline insulting. Chair, you've heard 4SA submissions, it's on record. You've heard what the other organisations have said. We don't believe there's any need at this juncture to defend what you have clearly heard to be the voice and the consensus of the religious people of South Africa. They can speak, and they have indeed spoken for themselves. 4SA remains committed to the process of finding truly self-regulatory, sustainable solutions to the concerns legitimately identified by the CRL, and we would therefore reiterate our appeal to this committee, along with the overwhelming of other consensus of the other organizations in this House who have made a similar appeal, for a national consultative conference where the religious community can talk with one another and collectively find solutions by the religious community for the religious community. I thank you for the opportunity of reply, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Pastor Aaron Makili. I am the President of the Great Commission. I'm very happy to get this opportunity to say what I want to say. And I want just to correct one thing that it was raised here to say why Great Commission is yesterday, today, presenting that they are not
supporting the CRL. I just want to say a word there. Because people, if I can say that in Xhosa, abantu ingumazi, abaphekqalayo. In our organization, some of the pastors or the bishop and leaders, they don't agree with what CRL was proposed. Then, because this is a free country, anybody can say what he wants. Then I'm still supporting what I was supporting to CRL, to say, if CRL is trying to solve the problem that is happening in South Africa, I am the president of the Great Commission, because I know everybody who has a Bible in his hands, he is fulfilling the Great Commission. I'm standing here, Chairperson, to say these issues that CRL raised to solve the problem that is around this country, I am fully support on that. What was my proposal to CRL to say this is, I'm very happy today because they are clearing this. Maybe some other pastors, they will be clear what was I was saying. They are saying, they are not saying they want to regulate the churches. This is what I've done all these years. I'm leading the bigger organization that is fraternal and umbrella of other organizations. This is what they are saying. That's why for me, it was not difficult to say, go ahead, because I cannot, as a leader of the kingdom of God, folding arms when I see something happen, people eating grass, people drinking drinks. But what I want to say also, before I sit down with the chairperson, is this. We need a solution right now. As a Christian leaders, we need a proper solution. I think South Africa, Republic of South Africa, they've got constitution that is leading them to take any decision. Now, we as a Christian, we need to have one constitution from God, the Bible. If you allow me these 2-3 minutes of my brother, there's one verse that I can just say.
Cut.
Let me just say this one, just to finish it, please, sorry, to say what is in the Bible. The Bible is telling us clear that there's no authority that is coming from anywhere besides allowed by God. Now we need to, what's my proposal to go forward? For me, it is a good thing to work with a good partnership with the government and the churches. Then we can have a say in South Africa. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity. 2 short remarks. I liked the proposal from the chairperson of the CRL Commission that they intend to call a conference. It was said that will be a consultative body. I think they must go ahead with that as soon as possible. All religions must be invited and there must be no prejudice against anybody attending that conference. Secondly, I want to support the questions that the Honourable Mayhill asked here about what are you going to do if you have these different religions. It is an essential part of freedom of religion, Chair, that religions have the right to determine their own internal structure. And what we heard from the Commission, I think that is perhaps the biggest complaint that we have against the report, is that they want to make one structure for all religions in South Africa. A religion, whether it be Muslim or Jewish or whatever, structures it itself according to its faith identity. That is one of the essential marks of freedom of religion. Thank you very much.
Mine is just a comment and a question to Madam Commissioner Mamam Konasi. And again, Prof. Musoma, during your opening remarks, you quoted a Pope. I don't know whether Prof. have ever been in Basilica, because my question based on commissionalization of religion. I don't know whether you've ever been in Rome. In Rome, first of all, when you jump out of the bus, there are several lots of merchandise. They show you and they tell you that you must buy, because if you don't buy by this time, the Pope will come out and bless everything. So once we jump out of the buses, then we buy because we want Pope to bless whatever we bought there. So, and again, this is part of commercialization of religion. I want also to ask Madam Chair, maybe he can answer me about this question: who is benefiting from the Bible? Because we buy Bibles every day, and then I want you to tell me what is commercialization of religion, so that we know, because I'm one of apostola, and if a person comes to join my church, first of all, he must buy a uniform. So if you can explain to me, elaborate, what is commercialization of religion? Because right there in Rome, whatever, once you jump out, you must buy, because you want the Pope to bless everything which you bought.
Yes, sir.
Chairperson, yes, I really observe the 2 minutes. I just want to raise two questions or two issues. The very first issue, I want to draw the attention of the parliamentary committee to this issue that we have heard already. The issue is about the ability of CRL, but its total unwillingness to be inclusive and truly and genuinely and openly inclusive in this process. This comes from a quick observation this morning when the chairperson was being given the opportunity to speak. She says she would rather speak after people who support her. She implied that will have spoken. We are saying, and I'm moving over to the next one very soon, that creates the impression of favoritism, which is a violation of one of the key values. Madam Chairperson of the CRL, it destroys your credibility to bring a rented crowd to this committee. The second point is, no matter how discursive, no matter how open we are, no matter how creative we are about these, there are issues that are refusing to go away. The process of consultation was flawed, the sampling was flawed, the size was too small, you forced people to come before you, you did not consult the communities that were allegedly abused, you consulted their leaders who were supposed to confess and say, yes, we abuse our people. The legality of and the constitutionality of your recommendations is in question. That won't go away. Thank you.
There's a female next room, Ted, but let us allow the female colleague.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are just two issues I want to bring to the Chairperson of the Commission. Number one, I think core to what her committee is mandated to do is to look at human dignity, protecting it. Secondly, it was ensuring that everybody is consulted. These are core to what she has to do. The very human dignity she purports to be protecting is very selective, in the sense that she chose to summon leaders of our federation without protecting their dignity. And if it is about the protection of dignity, it should help, and it will help South Africa, such that everybody is consulted and their dignity is upheld. Secondly, the issue of charlatans is not a subject that we're supposed to be talking about today, because we need to have put those charlatans and con artists in jail. And for it to be a subject of discussion in this room is very discouraging, and it has some elements of decoy or something, because we're going to begin asking questions like, were these charlatans not decoys to the very issues we have about wanting to protect our people? And we're saying, we do not want charlatans in our environment, it doesn't matter where. So it cannot be a subject that has to be put onto the table. And last but not least, the chairperson indicates that there were complaints about certain religious organizations. I guess she has those complaints. However, one of our affiliates within the AFFC was actually summoned, and they asked, do you have complaints about us? And her response was, no, we do not have complaints about your church. However, we are inviting you to engage for an investigation so that you can help us in putting things in order. And I'm saying, if truth be the element of what is going to be done with and through the CRL, truth should be it. Because we are people who fear God, and we are not going to go into areas where we are not going to be telling the truth wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be really 1 minute. Thank you so much. No, it's going to be very short. Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And we really want to thank even the chairperson of the commission. But I want to, say one or two things. One of them is that, so that this house, the members of the committee, when they deliberate, they have this understanding. When you speak about regulating practitioners, and you take the cue from mainland churches, you've got to understand that practitioners even within the churches is different. For instance, in my church where I come from, everybody preaches. Everybody preaches. You know, last week we had a door-to-door. Everybody in the church was preaching.
Right.
Are you going to give license to every member?
Yeah.
Are you going to give license to every member of the church? Everybody is encouraged to preach every day. That's our religion. So how are you going to regulate this? So I want the house to understand that when you talk about regulation, it's really, really going to be a difficult matter. That's why the suggestion that it should be allowed the church itself to regulate its own matters, because it's a very complicated matter. It's not easy. The second thing that I want to say on this one is the issue of being part of the a bigger group. The right of freedom, the right of association, also does mean the right not to associate.
Yeah.
So I have a right not to associate with any inoculants. It's still protected by the very same constitution. And therefore, we want to say, add to what our colleagues have said, let this report go back to the CRL Commission. Let the CRL Commission call or engage in an extensive consultation with all religious bodies and all religious organizations. We are prepared to come and work with you to find solutions. We are unhappy with what's happening. We are unhappy with what is reported. We too want to ensure that these things don't continue, but we don't want that to end up being regulating religion. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to make three statements before asking three questions to the CRL. The issue of registration has to be clarified, because some of us, our churches are registered. And while our churches are registered, there are others who are not in favor of registration. And that problem has to be addressed, and we need to know what the right thing is. We are registered, I'm registered, and we submit returns to SARS, and I think accountability is something that the scriptures teach. Now, when we register, we obviously include addresses. Some people have questioned why there is a need for addresses. When you register, as an MPO, whether we register with us, you have to include the register. Now, if there is no register and there is an abuse, and a person takes the abuser, maybe reports the abuser to the police, how do the police trace that person if there is no address? The second issue I want to raise is that all rights have limitations. Christian leaders should take their guide from the scriptures. And the Bible clearly says in Galatians 5:1, that for freedom Christ has set us free, but we must not use our liberty as an opportunity for the flesh. So while there is freedom that Christ has given us, We are also instructed not to use our liberty as an excuse to do wrong. So while we accept the fact that the scriptures do teach about limitations, we also have to be reminded that an attorney by the name of Prince Hussein Rastafarian went to court, to the Cape Town High Court, to demand the right that his members smoke dagga in public, because that's part of his religion. The High Court limited that right and said it's not in the best interest of the public. He appealed and went to the Supreme Court. They said the same thing. He went to the Constitutional Court. Constitutional Court said the same thing. So all rights, scriptures true, rights have limitations. And the case of Prince also shows that rights have limitations. I obviously do not want to sit around people who are smoking dagga. And I'm glad that my right not to inhale dagga has been protected. The second one, has to do with accountability. Now, many of us who have been in churches for years, who have been Christians for years, know that when a person has done wrong, according to scripture, that person must be exposed. The Bible teaches in Ephesians that we must not cover iniquity, we must not cover sin, but we must expose it. And in a church situation, when a person has done wrong and is being exposed, discipline is expected. So we must not speak as if we are people who don't believe the Bible. The scriptures give us guidance. So now the three questions to the CRL. Under the code of ethics, I want to know who you propose should draft this code. And in the drafting of this code, I heard that one of you guys is looking into that, researching that. But in the drafting of the code, will churches be represented in the drafting of the code? And secondly, I want to know who will enforce that code. It's one thing on paper to have a code of ethics, but if those ethics are not complied with, who will be enforcing them? Thank you, Chairperson.
That's very kind of you. There's so many questions, sir. If we do be accountable, we Christians, what about this crowd that have come along with these things? I have here Bishop Andile Mbedi. He is the Bishop of the Methodist Church. In front of me, this lady said that she spoke to the Bishop of the Methodist Church. You know what this man said to me? I want this committee, because you guys make the, you gentlemen, you people make the, honorable people make the final decision. The fact of the matter is, you know what this bishop said? He's Methodist. She's claiming, whether she's misleading us or not meaning to do it, he said, we will not submit to this commission in, even if they kill us. And I have a letter here repudiating the commission. There it is, Bishop Andile Mbedi. And she says the Methodists are supporting her. I question it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very concerned by the response and submission by the commission itself. I get the impression that they are taking a so-called Stalingrad approach, in the sense that they are fortifying what they have already indicated in paper. Now, concerns was raised in accordance with what was required. Paper is patient, and they presented us with a report, and in terms of that report, the responses was made, and I get today the impression that the real legal effect of that report is soft-spoken, and given the impression that it will not have the effect which normally in law, when interpreting a contract, when interpreting proposed statutory enactments, will have the effect that was on numerous occasions indicated. So my major question is, is the Commission in no way considering to consider the submissions that was made, more in particular those submissions that dealt with the legal issues of the legality and the constitutionality of the proposed amendments to the Act, etc. So my concern is that what is today expressed is not what was said in the report. So it's another interpretation of the document that we had to respond to. May it please your help back.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Maybe first let me start, Chair, by saying the way we engage each other is not assisting us as members, because we've got members asking direct questions to each other, and then it brings some confusion and also starting to bring other new issues that has not been supposed to be entertained. But my major problem, Chair, is that why, especially those that don't want to be regulated, why are you not, do you not want to be regulated, particularly because you are well known, you know your operation, you've got nothing to hide. Why are you not wanted to comply with the rules or with the legislative part of it, of this country? Because a number of examples have been cited here that in other countries, this thing that is happening in South Africa has not been done. Why are we afraid? And what is your solution? Because most of you are not even telling us the solution. You said you want to have a self-regulation, but you are not telling us how are you going to do that. We have been sitting with your self-regulation for years and nothing that is coming forth until the Commission has raised this matter. Secondly, also, Chair, we are members of Parliament. We can't fold our arms and close our eyes when things are happening in front of us. To say who we are members of Parliament. We are also the public. We are also the community. We are also concerned about things that are happening in this country. We are not, therefore, then expected to fold our eyes because something has been happening there and not this side. The comparison that has been put forward here, Chair, is totally unfair. A good example has been cited now for the Dhaka. Because if people smoke Dhaka and you say this is our belief, and then we want that to be said, is the same constitutional court said, no, this is not right. So, no, Melham, I gave you a chance to speak. So what I'm saying, say, what is it that needed to that you need to hide if you don't want to disclose your books?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. You have asked about suggestions that get us further. Let me try on that. Matters that will need to be considered further in the attempt to curb abuse by some individuals. And the emphasis was always the majority is doing things right. We're talking about some individuals. Most of the issues I'm raising here have not been addressed yet. The first, as a scholarly observer, when I look at the report and you said we have taken in the suggestions, I read those 1.5 or 2 pages, but I was actually very disappointed because it just lists those things. But it's not sufficient to just list things and then say something about it, which in most instances to a thinking person was not a real response. Then a second point for the committee to consider, do not play out human dignity and freedom of religion against each other. Freedom of religion or belief is based on human dignity, and freedom of religion or belief may not abuse human dignity. You're very right there. So I'm not defending the charlatans who abuse religious freedom and under the guise to do wrong things. But in the attempt to curb that, you must not openly restrict the religious freedom of all the others who are doing the right thing. And this is a very, very delicate balance before which this committee sits. So the next point is, when looking at permissible limitations of freedom of religion or belief, which are very, very narrowly defined in international law, I recommend that you look at the harm principle. And I will not elaborate on this, but you can look at John Stuart Mill, who already in 1859 elaborately wrote on it, on liberty. Or you can look at Laurie Beeman, defining harm, religious freedom, and the limits of the law, a doctoral thesis in 2008. This will get us further on this very tricky issue. Another matter to look at, distinguish what the state may do and what religious bodies may do. There are very clear limits and distinctions for both. I have the impression these limits and distinctions in the conversation have become very much blurred. The state must stick to what the state can do and not transgress, and the churches can only do what is within their realm. A fourth point, look at whether religious practitioners can simply be equated with professionals and career choices with all the consequences, because that is a main argument in the whole proposal. There are religious groups who dispute this, who say, no, these people, they don't have to work, we give them a stipend so they can look after the spiritual needs and they don't have to go for a job, it's not a job. And if at the bank they say, I'm a pastor, that doesn't mean you can equate that with the profession of a doctor or your lawyer. And the sixth, and I think that's my last point, ensure that what is resolved remains within the international human rights framework and the detailed interpretations developed within the United Nations. South Africa has to develop its responses within this framework, and it's very helpful interpretations. And I have not noticed any cognizance of that yet in the responses received. Thank you very much.
From the All Africa Federation of Churches. As Africans, we worship God spiritually, not religiously, which I think it would be impossible to have the practitioner regulated. Even in the case of Jesus Christ, I believe he was doing his work spiritually. He never did his work religiously, which is why he was in constant clashes with the Pharisees, because they brought the book and he brought spirituality. So with Africans, I think this becomes really problematic. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and all the honorable members of Parliament. Chair, I'm also from AAFC, All African Federation of Churches. Chair, I'm coming from a very... I'm coming from Khayelitsha, practically, but I want to expose how Khayelitsha is, as you have looked on the newspapers and so forth. Particularly on killing of women, young women, and also the issue of killing children. which has just taken, you know, lots of media front pages in papers. So what has happened there is that if we compare, I'm trying to compare the situation with what is happening to Khayelitsha. If as leaders of Khayelitsha, we can say young women, children are being killed by, you know, their boyfriends and so forth, or the youth who are males, and then let us just close our eyes and start to attack all those young males without really, you know, pinpointing who's wrong. I think that can be a very wrong approach. Here, what is happening, which has been raised for a long time, that we are having few of those big incidents which came from papers, reported as nasty incidents, and there are laws which are there, and then there are NPA which is there to tackle those issues. Why are we not taking that approach? Because these cases which we're talking about are not hidden cases. Another thing which is important, this report of CRL has been a report of few churches which has been called, not the majority. But on top of that, it has not been cutting across like in churches like Hindus and so forth, as the Honorable Member has said. Which means that, again, you cannot have a law which is attacking a certain section, not cutting across, trying to deal with each and every religion. Then, which then, therefore, Chair, means, definitely, the approach and the way how this law is being pushed is totally not in the normal procedures of creating any law. So I'm appealing to the House to say there has been a very, you know, a good recommendation of saying that before we do anything, before we think about anything, allow the religious groups to meet, have the National Consultative Forum, and start to tackle their own issues. I think out of that, that's where we're going to have a solution. And that is so sad to find that that, you know, is still a debate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, there's a proposal on that. The last person is a colleague. No, it's the last person.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. As I said yesterday, and I'm making what I'm saying now in completely in my personal capacity, I've been involved in religious liberty internationally for the last 20 years. And I am on record more than once to say that I believe this report was a bona fide attempt of the CRL Rights Commission to resolve a real problem. I'm just going to tell you a short story, but ultimately this must end up in legislation, whichever way we look at it. During 1998-99, the Russian Duma, the Russian Parliament, passed laws which made it very, very cumbersome for churches to register. One of our members there, a Christian lawyer, she sat down and she wrote a manual helping churches to register. We helped her to make CDs and post them all across Russia, and thousands, hundreds of thousands of churches were registered as a consequence. Even the government came to ask her to assist them to register churches. Everything was good and well until 2 years ago. The Russian Duma passed one more provision saying that all places of worship and all places of religious activity have to be registered facilities, which immediately closed down all the house churches, all the prayer groups. It is now illegal to have a cell group in your house. And that is the danger if we do not go about this very, very carefully. I repeat, my proposal yesterday, Mr. Chair, that there needs to be a proper investigation into existing legislation, and that that legislation must be developed and expanded to see whether there is enough space there for proper prosecution by the different authorities. The second one is we have to have a look at what happens in Africa. In Africa we have a range from very strict registration in Botswana to no regulation in Ghana. The churches completely rebelled against registration in Ghana. And then finally, let us support all of the efforts of education, but the CRL Rights Commission has our full support in resolving this problem.
Chair, to me this is a very big question. That you see the issue of umbrella. A body, whether given the diverse beliefs, diverse doctrines of all these organizations, whether there will be any consensus around the issue of correction, the issue of peer review committee, issues of ethical issues, whether there will be any other, there will be any agreement around these issues. Because really, as people kept on presenting, we got, diverse, various views that at the end of the day, one is unable to say this is the real thing. Because, people present from various perspectives, and at the end of the day, one does not know which one is the correct one. That is the problem. I think what should happen, Chair, is that the organizations themselves, we must throw back the issue to them to say they must go and sit down and come and tell us what the issues that they agree upon. Because we are confused. We are on the edge of considering the report. But now we are confused given all these views. So my suggestion is that can't we actually say they must go and reach consensus on these issues before we take a decision as a committee. That is my feeling, really.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a slightly problem here. As from yesterday up to today, I'm not so sure with all these religious leaders, how many people have you represented? How many people? That's my problem. Or are we going to consider the individual view and so on? Then something with the states, because at the end of the day, when you consider your submission and so on, you must take decision. And our decision must be informed, more especially with the number of, maybe if you consider your submission or your view, I think you must also check the number that you are representing. Because I don't think that can be fair, Chairperson. That you consider the view of one person, 2%, and so on and so on. You must at least check also that you are representing for how many people. Because we believe that those people who know that you are representing have sent you, to go there and represent. Yeah, that's the problem. That's my key problem. As we are going to consider your report. Or your presentation, yes.
Okay, now. Let us call upon the CR, then conclude, and we move. You wanted to make a point?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Today's engagement, from where I sit, makes me to believe that the religious leaders
know, the church is divided into two now. Somehow, somewhere. And there are those who say, indeed, we support that. Others then say, no, there are some elements of the report that we support, but we are not happy about other sections of the report. And secondly, Chair, I think there are those who believe 100% that, you know, religion is older than the state. You know, religion have existed 2,000 years back. The state is younger than the religion. Now, there are, I think some believe that, who are the states to tell us that I must not go and use umncindo. The chair will know umncindo because we come from the same province. And among the elements, umncindo, there are some mixtures there of, you know, some parts of the snake, some snakes. That is true. My grandfather was a traditional healer. I know sometimes how those things are created. And that person who has that knowledge will argue and say, what is wrong with the commission is that they are trying to, you know, to measure, to say those ones who does that in the name of Christianity are worse than those who does that in the name of traditional healing. Now, you see, we can expand this, go, you know, because you can't really, like, for example, there are no Shembe people here. They've got their own, you know, way of worshipping and believing in God. They are not here. And lastly, Chair, somewhere the chair of the commission indicated that in the registration of practitioners, there is a, you know, a practitioner must be registered, and perhaps even the members of the church. And, you know, a person who is very observant will ask and say, but why, you know, to the members of the church? Because members of political parties are not registered in the IEC. Only a political party and perhaps maybe the leadership is registered, but not the membership. So I'm appealing, Chair, that perhaps we, you know, we I know it has been a difficult exercise for the commission to produce such a document. And we may think that a lot of resources were actually spent, but I think it will be better, I mean, to implement something that will not be questioned. And I'm thinking that in the exercise that we want to do, we must give to some extent religious practitioners themselves to put suggestions in how they want or wish to correct the situation that exists already. Because it will not be always correct that we can make laws on incidents. I know, for example, in the Department of Education, there is a law now that talks about declaration of interest to teachers. That if I meet my teacher and decide to give him 350 rands to buy Johnny Walker Black, he must go back to the principal and declare that. When in fact it might be, you know, impossible for him to be known at work that he or she takes whiskey. It's a private matter. But now because that was brought forward to correct certain things where it has happened in certain schools, not in the whole Department of Education. It was not happened. But they came with a law because one or two principals were doing it. Now even in areas where there is no bad intention really, it's applicable now. So I'm really, you know, appealing to say that, you know, the commission, I know it has been a very difficult exercise. But, you know, so that when we try and implement, there are no people who are saying, no, we're never consulted, this is unfair, this is what. But also understanding colleagues, especially from the religious sector, that, you know, as we speak, some of these things that we are saying are wrong might be continuing. So the agency from us also to cooperate is really necessary. And I know that because you are here, you really want to cooperate. I just wanted to make those few words, Chair. Thank you very much for your mess, because you have closed the hands. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. To make it to my 2 minutes, I think I'll just read from the few notes I've taken here based on some of the recommendations that which we have heard stated in here. So for me, it's just a question, and one being that those who will be sitting on these peer review committees and councils, who will actually discipline them if they go against the scriptures or have questionable moral ethics? Because you cannot separate religion from that. And secondly, the commissioner said that it is a human being making a decision to follow a certain career. But this is quite problematic, to liken a calling actually with a profession or a religious leader. This has just been a bit of a problematic term for me to find that a religious leader would be seen or regarded as a religious or a practitioner. I mean, a career and a calling is obviously not the same thing. A career is decided. A calling is discovered. A career is natural. A calling is supernatural. A career can change. A calling does not change. A career is something that you choose. A calling is something that you receive. A career is something that you do for yourself. A calling is something you do for God.
Amen.
A career promises status. It promises money or power. But a calling generally promises difficulty, suffering,
right,
and the opportunity to be used by God. I can go on and on and on. And so the other thing is, it should be understood from those of us who may have been in the ministry for quite some time and understanding, you know, what the Bible actually have to say about some of the suggestions or recommendations that have been made, and the reason as to why some of the religious leaders have had some problems with the report itself. And it could be some of us, we are basing our arguments based on the scripture, and here it is, 1 Corinthians 6 verse 1 says, if any one of you, or if any of you has a dispute with another, do you dare to take it before, I know that this might be sounding harsh, but it's in the scripture, do you dare take it before the ungodly for judgment instead of before the Lord's people? The New Living Translation, part of it says, when one of you has a dispute with another believer, can be those eating flesh or eating snakes or whatever, when one of you has a dispute with another believer, how dare you file a lawsuit and ask a secular court, the CRL Commission, to decide the matter instead of taking it to other believers? And I think it was clearly mentioned even yesterday that the best would be that there be a conference and we can tackle these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are still going to be engaging with you. We will learn also from your experience. Time really is not on our favor. We wanted to give you more time. Masonto.
That's what I wanted to say was briefly just to say that we need to outline the process. Maybe the sheriff, commission chairperson will assist us, but by and large, I think you'll have the last word on this particular matter. But some of the things that need to happen is that we should all acknowledge that a foundation has been laid and that we need to build on it. The second thing that I think is important is to have a high-level summary of all of the issues that have been raised in preparation for further engagement in the committee. As others have already indicated, we may need to also, I think there is a need to include other religious groups. And lastly, the conference idea seemed to be keep on arising, Chairperson, and it may be useful to give this an examination, perhaps at our next meeting.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add something that occurs to me is that I think part of the problem is, I'm representing Christian Science Committee on Publication for the Cape Provinces. And part of the problem, I think, is that we're trying to apply a secular model to a religious or spiritual problem, if you can call it that. And the secular model is lawyers have to have a register in such and such a way, medical practitioners in the same way, and to expect spiritual practice to comply with secular norms and values is, I think, is part of our challenge. It wants to standardize or humanize something that is spiritual and divine. And these atrocities and the types of things that we're seeing are in no way, I don't think any spiritually minded individual would ever ever accept that is in the name of God or in the name of anything spiritual. And I'm reminded of Karen Armstrong, who did investigation, and out of that came the Charter of Compassion. I'm sure a lot of you know about that. And I was at the function where our dear Archbishop Desmond Tutu spoke about the research that went into that Charter of Compassion, that throughout the ages, as far back as what this individual could investigate, she found that there was a form of a commandment, which I think we need to come back to, and that is, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, or do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. And they found that in every spiritual teaching throughout the ages, there was a form of that commandment. And I would just like to suggest that we go home and we start with that as our basis and see where we move forward, because we can never try and regulate something that is evil. We need to obliterate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'll try and go through what I was able to jot down, and then maybe the other members of the commission will help. It's been a long day, so maybe my writing has slowed down. I think the issue of, we should deal with it, the issue of whether we deceive Parliament or not. I think great commission president has already clarified. When you meet with the president of an organization, you like to say, I've consulted and they're fine. When you meet with the SACC, there are organizations under it. And if a bishop further down the line says something else, it's not because you came here to deliberately mislead. Fortunately, all meetings were noted and were recorded. So there is no claim that was made here that was not founded. As you can see, the example of the Great Commission, and we're not going to go into the details of the other organizations. But what we're saying is that the organizations that were on that list, at Secretary General level, we've met with them. And even on Monday, TIASA, IFCC, and the SACC, Secretary Generals were in our office to affirm our understanding. We've raised what the issues were, then they said these are the issues they want us to note, but the framework they agree with. So we didn't misrepresent ourselves here, and I think we should state that upfront. Then there's the issue that the Honourable Member raised, that you must believe anything, even if it is bizarre, illogical, or something else. What we're saying is that the sector itself must tell us where the doctrine starts and where it ends. We've repeatedly said, if the umbrella organizations come back and say to us, eating grass is in the Bible, so don't get yourself in a tight corner. But if they say, in our doctrine, this is not there, that's what we'll base it on, because it's the seniors and the peers in that religion who will determine what works and not us. The issue of complaints handling manual. We've got many procedures that we use at the CRL Commission. There are people who come to complain about a specific thing. We call this an investigative study. We didn't call it a complaint. Tons of complaints come and we use a particular methodology. This was a different methodology that we decided as the Commission, after applying our minds, to use. The issue of the Code of Ethics, I think that was also raised. What we're saying is that the religious formations themselves must agree to a Code of Ethics. But we're not going to go to them empty-handed. We'll go to them with a draft. Hence we said, we've also committed, which maybe we should clarify, to a conference that we're going to call to say, this is how far we've thought of this thing. What do you think? What can we add to it? What can we subtract to it? Because we feel a code of ethics is the basics, but that it should be enforceable. It should not be a nice people's agreement. There must be a way of enforcing it, and we feel it will be the basis of saying, this is what is acceptable and this is what is not acceptable. Once, as we said, we've assigned a commissioner, he says, yes, we're ready to move to that stage. He's been talking to international practices, to other people. Yes, the problem we have, honorable members and honorable chair, is that because there's no register for religious institutions, for churches, when you want to consult them, you rely on umbrella organizations. Somebody once said, there are over 140,000 churches in this country, of about 80% of them not registered with social development. So when you want to consult people, when there's no database to consult them, it becomes very difficult. Because when people say, you didn't consult us, we'll then ask, where are you? How are we supposed to get to you? We've relied on the mainstream churches and other formations to give us names and addresses of people to invite. But the basic reason being that when you want to know who is where, there's no place you go to where you can find how do we get to them. It's the problem that even if you were to facilitate a national consultative conference, you're likely to see the same faces. But if you're going to be looking around, You need to have a database somewhere, and that problem has not left us. We've looked and looked and looked. We found those that we could find and others we couldn't find. We had meetings in Durban, basing it on the Fraternal Cape Town and other places, Northwest, etc., as Bishop Matebese was saying. We've been all over the country looking for religious leaders. But we could only find those that maybe the Premier's office knew. At other times, we asked the Premier's office to help other provinces like Gauteng. They have a list that they've got of practitioners that they gave us, but we discovered that that list was not fully representative. So it's an ongoing problem that I think will stay with us. And then there were specific questions from Reverend Meshwe. The code of ethics, who should draft this code? We said we'll have a draft, and then we'll consult on the draft. And what we'd like to do, if religious leaders have a list...
On a point of order, I've just spoken to Tisa. They say they are not supporting the CRL. This lady got up and told herself that it is.
You see the difficulty, Honorable Chair members, is that you talk to the Secretary General of an organization and you think you've got a deal with them. Reverend McGill is here, Bishop McGill is living proof. He's saying, he was speaking to us, but there were people here who were saying that the Great Commission, and when you talk to the President in good faith, you're talking to the President. What then happens within organizations, if he's talking to someone outside, we can't be blamed for that, because it's an internal problem that organizations must resolve. And then the issue of, let me go back to Honorable Reverend Meshwe. The issue of code of ethics, we're saying if people have a list, if they can give us people, religious leaders, then we'll consult with everyone once we have a draft, Reverend, so that you don't go to people and say, what would you like? So that they say, okay, here and there and there, no. Here and there and there, yes. Add this, subtract this, do this, do that. But we'll have a basic framework, and then if we can be given more addresses and more names, we'd really appreciate that. We're committed to a national consultative process on the code of ethics. And then you asked whether will churches be represented. Yes, definitely. And then the issue of enforcement, Honorable Reverend Meshwe. That's why we're saying there must be a legal mechanism. We can't walk away from it. There must be a way of enforcement. That will have to come from here to tell us how all these things will be enforced. And it's not for us to do that. We'll be advised by Parliament on those things in terms of enforcement, because those are legal imperatives. The issue of other religions, for instance, we're talking to the Hindus just yesterday. They have given us a statement of support. We'll send it to the committee through the secretary. We're talking, as we said, we're talking to everyone he's an advocate, Chikamji, who represents the Hindus in the National Religious Leaders Forum. We have been talking to him, and he's committed to the process we've put in place. As I said, if other Hindus further down, and I'm a Hindu, and I say, I had this temple, and I'm against that, it's not for us now to be chasing after every individual who belongs somewhere. We need to get to a stage where we talk to the leadership, and the leadership must talk to the membership. and it shouldn't be left at our door. The issue of, I agree with the Honorable Melham in terms of there must be other religions brought on board. We agree fully to that. And if you'd like us to facilitate that on behalf of the committee, or if the committee wants to do that themselves, we will go with whatever the committee decides on bringing in other religions into the conversation. And then the issue of who will discipline the discipliners in terms of if you've been elected by the religious sector to be on the peer review committee, or we are the head of an umbrella organization and you're doing something wrong, there must be part of the format should include a disciplinary code, like everything else. There must be a disciplinary code that will say if you do this, that will be developed by that umbrella organization. I think there was a bit of a confusion. Umbrella organizations, for instance, will find that the SACC mainly has mainline churches. You'll find that the IFCC has other charismatic churches. So already people are formed according to their own little tweaks here and tweaks there in terms of Christianity. And if it happens with Jewish people, I'm sure there will always be splinter groups, whatever, and people can have their own formations. I'm sure here today we saw how many formations are out there based on, I want to join that one and not that one. I don't know if I've left anything. My chest is not cooperating. My brain is on leave now.
I think Chairperson, the umbrella body, by and large, is what constitutes a major difference. As if what we are proposing is to do away and constitute a new body. I think the already, as the chair has indicated, majority of presenters or groupings that are here are already in the umbrella bodies. So that, like the Honorable Mishwe, he constitutes an umbrella body already, because the discipline, the training, the issuing of certificate, the ordination are done within that environment. So there is no suggestion that we are going to take, say, a Roman Catholic and join with the Jewish Board of Deputies. There is no. Already, the umbrella bodies exist in this current juncture. So what we need to do is to make sure that these umbrella bodies are responsible for the management, for the code of conduct, for the welfare of the institution they represent. Even issues of discipline will not be done by somebody else. It is themselves who must emit out discipline in that environment. So this is the arrangement that when that umbrella body has a problem, or suppose the minister or the pastor in that umbrella body has done something wrong, it's not CRL who is going to call this pastor to account. It is the umbrella body. What will be saying to the umbrella body? What have you done? Because this particular issue, this particular pastor, has now brought, as far as we're concerned, your umbrella body into disrepute. The issues are now in the public domain. What do you do? It is them who must take action against their own. So there's no way of trying to have a different configuration. But I think it is the misunderstanding of what we understand to be the what you call the... When we talk about the practitioners, these are the reverends, the pastors, the ministers, okay, who are part of that lineage of umbrella body within Roman Catholic Church, Anglican Church, and things like that. Issue is, at the end of the day, we need to ensure there's order, there's civility, there's respect, and this coexistence among religious institutions. That's about it. Not to control them. Yeah.
Chair, I just want to come in terms of some of the questions that were raised around the methodology. and the issues of summons and invites, which I think Honorable Melem did clarify yesterday, that the issue of summons, we can question it until the cows come home. But it is there within the Act. We can use it. And we have used it. But I need to say that before we issued the summons, and we've explained to the religious sector throughout the whole country, I'm looking here for the faces that don't know about this answer that I want to give now. Because one thing that religious sector forgets is that when we engage with them, we do records in terms of attendance registers, in terms of sometimes recording and so on and so forth. So when we create certain situations of saying this did not happen and so on and so forth, it takes us back to the records. And that is the only defense mechanism we can bring out of everyone, even in the courts. So I just wanted to make sure that we had called a meeting of the religious sector, and we explained in 2015, not even once, that what actually prompted us to use the summons was after we've done a pilot study of about 4 to 5 provinces, and I counted them, Mpumalanga, KZN, and so on and so forth. And those meetings were held, assisted by the SACC in provinces. And in most cases, we used their venues to conduct those meetings. But the attendance was very low. Hence, we had to go to an option of summons to force people to come to this. That's one point. We have explained this many times, and I think we need to be honest as religious leaders. The second one is the issue of methodology. I mean, really, we as a commission requested the University of South Africa, a well-respected university in the whole world, to assist us with the methodology of this study and the gullibility part of it, because that's one question we wanted to answer. That, and we have a descriptive report that informs the recommendations that we have in the report. And that methodology was explained, is clear, is there. So if we're questioning the methodology, we must question the credibility of the University of South Africa. And that's how it is. And we've done it in 2015. And we've spent money to also pay the people who were assisting us with this methodology. At the University of South Africa, professors, for that matter, and very respected professors. So I'm just saying, in terms of methodology, we cannot question it. And those who actually understand research, you can do sampling. That's the question of 85 that you are coming up with. You can do sampling. A sampling is a representative of each and every... Oh, thank you, Chair. But I wanted to just...
Madam, we want to close now.
Chair, just two quick follow-ups, if I may. Yeah. Very quick. The first one is, on the summons, again, I don't dispute that you have the power to summons. I think it was heavy-handed. I think it was a very heavy-handed approach, and I think that there are better ways of dealing with it. Chair, just on what the chair lady said about TISA and Great Commission, I have here the submission from TISA, which was sent to yourself on the 31st of August. It's signed by the Secretary General, Reverend Moses and Clark. And it says in its last line, we are of the opinion that the answer to our current challenges in the religious sector is not new or additional legislation, but more in-depth and broader consultation. That was repeated here yesterday when they presented. So that's the official documentation from the Secretary General of TISA. On this hand, I have from the Great Commission, and it's from Simon Motong and V. N. K. Mashabe, who are the chairperson and deputy chairperson, respectively, of the Great Commission. Now, it may well be that there are differences of opinion, but this was presented here this morning. This document was read out here this morning. Nobody opposed it at the time. Nobody said, whoa, that's not the position of the Great Commission. That's what they said. So there are two organizations right there. Now, the South African Council of Churches is Anglican, Methodist, Catholic predominantly. All three of those bodies have come out against and strongly against the proposals in your report. So to say that the South African Council of Churches supports you, I think is disingenuous. But my real... I'm coming to my follow-up, Chair, and this is it.
Just hold on. I'm just worried because this team accounts to you.
Yeah.
I've already indicated that we'll have a meeting
with
a committee to do so.
That's fine.
Don't detain us more
okay.
than what we have been detained.
All right, my last point, Chair, is that I didn't get an answer on the Constitutional Court rulings. And contrary to what Honourable Mthethwa and Honourable Meshwe said, in the Prince case, the Constitutional Court found that regardless of how bizarre or irrational or personally harmful a belief may be, a person's right to that belief is sacred. So, again, Prince, the Lawrence case, how do you reconcile that interpretation of our Constitution with what you are proposing here? How do you reconcile that interpretation of freedom of religion with what you are proposing? And I didn't get an answer to that at all.
Surely the answer, you would get the answer when we meet with them. They will have a discussion about some of the issues. I think we have exhausted this matter now. Discussions will continue forever, I guess. Then the presentation we meant to assist members of parliament to be informed when we consider this report. I think we are more informed now than ever before, and we'll be ready to consider the report. The decision will be taken by the committee, what do we do with the report? And then we'll have a discussion with the commission, have an engagement, there'll be questions, and we'll engage on these issues. And there are a lot of issues that were considered. Honorable Chairperson, I think we also, National Consultative Conference, not a bad idea. And inclusiveness, talk about registration is an issue that we have to address. Code of conduct. I think that's what we should do always, to address the real question. And then another gentleman raised, what is commercialization? It's an issue that we have to be addressed. But the point that is raised, really, abuse, I think every person since yesterday, no one made a presentation who said we should accept abuses. Not a single one. Everyone was condemning the abuse, but of course qualifying as abuse. But they think need to be addressed. It's very clear that we are all agreeing that no one should abuse religion for whatever reason. And we agreed on that. Let us work it out. Professor, you have assisted us. We'll look at a book that we have proposed, but it's too thick. I think we are going to summarize it ourselves, because sometimes you can't interpret your religious text there, because otherwise it can be literal, sometimes not even literal, and cause harm to complete Greek society. And I think we are very happy with this. And thank you for the contribution. If we had more time, we're going to be here until 12 midnight. But all of you must be very exhausted now.
Honorable Chair.
And then thank you for...
Honorable Chair.
No, we are close.
Point of order, not the gentleman, Bishop.
Oh, Bishop.
Thank you. Thank
you. I'm Bishop. Bishop Wami, man. Okay. Yeah, no, Bishop, I know. I thought gentleman and Bishop is the same. Okay. No, I'm convinced now, but that's belonging that. I'm in a secular state. It's just important. But the point that I'm raising, that we have done very well, I think, thank you for your respect, is a difficult matter to deal with. And none of us can pretend that it's an easy thing to deal with. We can't be easy. It's like soccer anyway, it's difficult to deal with. And therefore, let us work on it, all of us. Let us make our positive contribution. Members of Parliament are here. the commission will come to the committee, Melham, they'll be well prepared for the answer, for the question that you have put already. And they have consulted as far as they are concerned. We'll have then a discussion on the process really will be worked out by the Standing Portfolio Committee and the commission. What else you want to do, that it's a difficult thing, and you know that we are from Amakhosi, who's a very religion. It is a very difficult exercise for members of parliament, but it's been very helpful. Thank you again for allowing us to facilitate this. We didn't give you millions of time, but I think we have made your contribution, and then thank you for this. And we hope again, as I was saying yesterday, Parliament is people's parliament. Those who want to come to a committee meeting, they are free to do so. They can come here. They don't need to be invited. Listen what the committee is saying. What are the issues? We must do that. We must just exercise our democratic right to participate in decision-making processes on our behalf. I think we should do so. And then thank you very much for this. And let us meet again. The commission will meet with us, have a discussion, a chair and a deputy chair and the team. Thank you for coming. Thank you for professors who are here, priests, bishops, everyone who's here. Thank you very much for this, and I think it was a very useful engagement. We have learned a lot from your experience. We are taking this thing really with humbleness it deserves. It's a complex matter. But let us solve the problem of our country. There's no need for us to fight amongst ourselves. We must provide solution to our problems. The problem is abuse there on the ground. We must solve it. No one can say the state can't protect life and the most vulnerable in society. But how does the state act is a question that we must resolve. It can't be correct that the state must just keep quiet when there are serious abuses to innocent people. That's why anyway, even ourselves, we are much more privileged in illiterate society. There are limits in terms of the speed on the road. And these are protecting us against our own stupidity sometimes. Therefore, this thing will happen everywhere. Let us work it out in a manner. South Africans, anyway, we are known in the world of solving most difficult questions. This one is more difficult, but we are going to solve it. Let us work together and solve this problem. Thank you very much. There's no tea at the moment, but we'll be invited for tea when we adopt the report. Thank you very much. Or we reject the report. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So this side must be closed, I mean, I can't stop it without it being closed.